Because hockey hasn't completely taken over your life yet. Subscribe to podcasts of Hockey Central at Noon through iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Knocking your teeth loose with the best hockey coverage possible. This is Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Certain points during the NHL season when things just get hot and people tune in and want to know everything that's going on. This is one of those weeks where the National Hockey League will gather its brass in Las Vegas. We're expecting the announcement of the Las Vegas Knights franchise to be awarded, plus the NHL awards handed out, and then everybody jumps in a plane and heads to Buffalo for the National Hockey League draft. The first round goes Friday night, rounds 2 through 7 on Saturday. This process on Saturday takes the same amount of time as the first round on Friday. Auston Matthews has signed his first major endorsement deal. He's expected to go first overall to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Patrick Laine, we predict, will go second to the Winnipeg Jets. And then Jesse Puljujärvi to the Columbus Blue Jackets. Then it's wide open. What would the Edmonton Oilers do with that fourth pick? Will they take a defenseman? Will they trade down and take a defenseman or go with Mr. Tkachuk at number 4. A lot to get to as we peruse that area. But off the bat today, Darren Millard here with Gord Stellick and Scott Morrison. We're going to chat about the Calgary Flames and their new head coach. Glenn Gulletson will join us in just a little bit. Plus, the general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, Ken Holland, will pop on. Emotional week for the Detroit Red Wings last week with the passing of Gordie Howe, and then business with Pavel Datsyuk announcing that he is going to forego the final year of his contract.
I think you saw the business side as well, that I know Joe Louis Arena was tied up because of the celebration of life and the visitation for Gordie Howe, but, I mean, this past weekend, you would think of a career ending with the distinction of almost like a Nick Lidstrom and that kind of backdrop and that kind of press conference. And instead, Pavel Datsyuk's in a tracksuit at his hockey school that he runs out in a suburban school, and you know, Ken Holland, I know he's busy, there's meetings, runs a separate presser, and I we'll talk to Ken in a few minutes time. I get the feeling he's biting his tongue a little bit. It's one of those things that has been there, everyone's known about it for a couple of years, and you just wonder how, in my case, when Pavel Datsyuk played 2 years overseas, one full season and part of another due to lockouts, how you're not up on the collective bargaining rules, particularly how, let's face it, it affects you. That's all you care about. How does it affect you? So apparently there was some, I don't know, Scott, some mix-up there, and the Detroit Red Wings have a $7.5 million problem.
Yeah, I think for Ken Holland, it's at best mixed emotions that this guy had a great career, won a couple of Stanley Cups with your team, was one of your best players, a great player, but now you're on the hook because he wants to go home. I mean, you know, Kenny, it could have been a heck of a lot worse. They almost signed a 5-year deal when they first went into that negotiation. So 3 is almost a win by comparison. But
that was with the former agent too, right? He's got a new agent now. Different
agent. But yeah, he got the 3-year deal, and it was Datsyuk that said, okay, let's settle for 3 and go from there. And then we'll get the timeline from Kenny, but fairly quickly decided that he wasn't going to see the end of that 3rd year. So he really put that team in a bind, regardless of who the agent was.
1 week into the first year of the contract, 1 week is when he approached Ken Holland that he wanted to go home. So you got like 2 years and 51 weeks left of a problem trying to figure it out. So probably Ken looks at it, we did as best we could. Now we're going to take our lumps, but we did get him to commit for another year. Great player, though. I mean, unfortunately, right now, this is diluting a little bit, I think. This guy was a great player.
It's overshadowing how good a player he was and how good he was for that organization, no question. I'm sure it's difficult for people in the Red Wings organization to kind of think about those good times when they've really got themselves a huge challenge right now by July 1st. If they're going to be able to be an active team and do anything significant on that day, they've got to move that contract in a hurry.
And teams know that they have to do it in a hurry, so that drives the price up.
Yeah, they're going to have to. Player and a prospect, or player, prospect, pick. I mean, whatever the combination is, it's going to be expensive.
The Carolina-Chicago trade is the most recent comparable in taking on Bickle and Teravainen going over to the Carolina Hurricanes. Seems to be in the ballpark. But will they get more than Teravainen? Because that's a steep price.
Well, it was, and I mean, the Hawks got a second and third back, but you're right. In Teravainen's case, they kind of established him as a third-line center in Chicago. I think at some point, and Ken Holland did say it, you know what, you're just going to keep the money. At some point, if the deal doesn't make sense, like buying a house or buying a car, and that's what he alluded to, then we won't do it. But if you are actually in the Steven Stamkos scenario, interested there, the $7.5 million cap hit in a year where the cap's going to be pretty flat would come very handy.
Here is the general manager, longtime general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, Kenny Holland. So you have to get on this pretty fast if you want to move this contract prior to free agency. It's going to force you. Yeah, it's going to force you to be busy.
Yeah, hi, guys. We're always busy this time of the year.
How much does this affect things, though, because of what you have to do and how much you have to clear?
Well, I mean, massively. I mean, $7.5 million. You know, the cap is going to be 72.5 and 73. It's 10% of the cap. So it's like I said at the press conference on Saturday. I mean, it's a huge hole. It's a huge blow. Put us in a difficult situation, but you know I've been at this for a long time. I'm thrilled that Pavel was here for 14 years, 950 games or a few more than that. Oh, I think almost 920 points. He helped us win two cups in 02 and in 08. Helped us make the playoffs every year. You know, when Yzerman and some of those people retired in 05, he and Zetterberg and Lidstrom kept the program going at a high level. And I've talked to Pav a lot and his agent Dan Milstein, over the last 18 months. I understand where Pav's coming from. I wish he'd stay, but I certainly understand where he's at. We made a deal with him. A gentleman's agreement, I guess, per se, a year ago that, play the 15. He wanted to go home a year ago. And we told him that we would exercise all our rights if he went home. And if he would play the 15-16 season and he decided that his heart wasn't here anymore, that we would respect that, then we would honor that. And that's where we're at today.
Ken, I heard you do the whole timeline in your press conference over the weekend. So two things. So we're to understand that the first week of when the new deal kicked in basically is when he indicated that he wanted to go home. And the other part is whether it's him or his previous agent really didn't understand the ramifications. Is that, I'm not asking you to speak for them, but is that how you understand it from their side?
I don't think that's true. I'd have to look. I can't remember. I know that we signed the deal in late June or early July, but I can't remember if he had a year to go on his contract and we signed it a year in advance, or if it was in July. And I haven't looked, and it hasn't. It's great for the media. It's great for you, but it doesn't really matter to me. It is what it is, and I got to deal with it. But basically, year one of the contract, we were in Traverse City. A training camp in the first week, and Pav said he wanted to meet with me when we got back to Detroit. We met, and Pav told me that he had done a lot of thinking, and this was going to be his last year in a Red Wing uniform, and he wanted to go back home. At that time he had Gary Greenston as the agent who we had negotiated the deal with, and I reached out to Gary, and we talked a little bit, and somewhere in that timeline, Pav made a decision that Gary was no longer his representative. And then it slowly became, over a short period of time, Dan Milstein, who really wasn't an agent, but it was his friend, and he's now in the agent business. But Dan, as a friend, came in to talk to on Pav's behalf. And then that was the year we lost out to Tampa Bay in seven games a year ago in 15. And then we have to explain to them his impact on the salary cap, all the things that we've talked about. I just wanted to make sure that they weren't. Pav's a hockey player. He doesn't know the CBA. That's not his job to know the CBA. That's what he hires people to do. I don't know the relationship and the conversations that went on between Gary Greenston and Pavel Dutsik. Pav, as it led up to this contract, and like I said there, when Gary and I were talking, Gary was pushing for a five-year deal. I didn't want to do a five-year deal, and I met with Pav. Pav stepped in, and Pav said 3 years works for him, and we did the three-year deal. Fortunately, we did the three-year deal, and they weren't pushing. Gary didn't continue to push for a five-year deal. Pav stepped in. So, you know, I think it's, you know, Pav doesn't know the rules. I don't know that it appears that Pav and Gary never had that conversation. Did Pav change his mind as he went along? I don't know. I'm not privy to all that. All I know is that I was brought into this, you know, early on in the first year of a three-year contract, and I tried to manage the situation the best I could. I tried to obviously make them aware of the CBA, of the impact on our team. And as we went through that process last summer, you know, Pav's heart was in Russia. Pav and I reached out with, you know, play the 15-16 season, and if you just decide that you're not going to change your, you know, your heart doesn't change and wants to stay, then we'll respect it, we'll honor it, and here we are today. So I'll deal with it. Pav's been a great player for us, and I'm thankful for everything that he's helped us accomplish here in Detroit.
Kenny, I'll bring Scotty Morrison in here in a second, but I just want to follow up on things. Kenny Holland, Detroit Red Wings executive vice president and general manager. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but into what you're saying.
You guys always do, but always go ahead.
But it does. You sound emotional, and you.
I'm not emotional. Like,
who are you upset with, though? Like, who?
I'm not upset. I'm not upset. You guys. You just said maybe I'm reading something into it. I said quite often you always
okay.
Go ahead. Then you sounded emotional.
There's a lot of emotion in this room.
There is. Well, it's a difficult time. So if this is a huge thing around the organization with this hole, to use your words, who are you disappointed in? Where are you? Where does your disappointment point to?
I don't think I got time to be disappointed. It's like I said at the press conference the other day. I think, you know, I guess part of the way I'm built and part of the way of the experience, the more times you can make decisions and emotion is not involved, I think you have the best chance to make the best decisions. And whether I'm disappointed in something or the process, I think it's best off to be kept internally because all it does is create further debate and further controversy. And I think that part of my job as a general manager is to try to have as little controversy around your team as is possible, given the world that we live in with social media and all the people that are paid to analyze the decisions that we do make or we don't make. So I don't really, you know, I went through this for 18 months. It's not like all of a sudden last week this decision kind of got thrown onto my desk. I've had 18 months, you know, almost not far off of 2 years here. When Pav told me, I've had lots of time to prepare for this decision. So I don't have any. I don't have any disappointments. I spent as much time as I could with Pav, with Dan Milstein, early on with Gary Greenston. And I respect that Pav, his heart isn't in it anymore. And he's wanted to go back to Russia. And it's been, you know, going back to the 14-15 season. I'm thankful that he wanted to play for us in the 15-16 season and not leave us with 2 years of his salary on the cap. So I don't have any it's a situation that I'm going to try to manage and deal with to the best that I possibly can.
So 2 points, Kenny. First, was there any time during this season that you had hope that he might come back? Was that possible at all?
Well, I think you're always hoping. You know, I'm hoping for lots of things. I, you know, certainly that was part of, I guess, me, you know, a year ago when Pav wanted to go home with 2 years to go on the contract. And finally, one day I said to Dan Milstein, Dan, what if what if we get, what if I extend this, I guess for lack of a better word, I don't know, is an olive branch or you know, if he's going to go home in the summer of 15, I have an obligation, I feel I have an obligation to exercise all our rights with the NHL. If a player retires, I can't stop a player from retiring. If he wanted to retire and end his hockey career, he could do it. If he wants to go back to Russia and continue his hockey career, we were going to try and do everything we could. But at the same time, it didn't make any sense to me to try to go to a player of Pavel's importance and what status and what he's meant to this franchise, who's from another country, to basically saying, you signed a two-year contract, I'm not having any further conversations with you, we're just going to force you to play. And I mean, I don't know how he would have played. And he could have come up with some funny injuries, you know. So at the end of the day, I tried to manage this thing, this situation, to the best that I could. So, you know, I'm happy that we were able to get Pav to this point in time. If we can't move the cap space, we won't be the only team in the league that's not at the cap. There'll be other teams that are going to be below the cap. Be no different than, you know, this year to start the year, the first 15, 20 games we were paying Pav, he wasn't in the lineup. We've got to find a way to be competitive, and we got to find a way to win hockey games.
Well, I was going to say, speaking of hope, how hopeful are you that you can move that contract, and how difficult is that going to be?
You know, I've talked to more than one team that if I'm going to, for lack of better words, kick tires on the situation. Continue to talk this week. You know, I mean, obviously, I think teams understand that it's a significant amount of cap space. Not only significant for us, it's significant for them. And you can look at, for us, it's a negative. Could it be a positive somewhere? That's what. I don't know. They have to determine that. You know, there is, you know, in a couple of cases, they want what I would consider significant future assets. And I don't know that that is in the best interest of the Detroit. I don't think that's in the best interest of the Detroit Red Wings long term, given where we at are in our timeline here. I think that where we are at is with young people. We're trying to have some veteran leadership on the team to help us make us competitive. But for me to trade away a player that I think might play 10 years in the National Hockey League to some degree to create the cap space for a year. Now, I guess you guys can debate where that money might be spent. I'll weigh it as we go along. Certainly, we're going into an interview period on Saturday, which gives all teams in the league the ability to talk to potential unrestricted free agents. But you know, we've got a lot of young players that don't have a lot of they're an entry level, and we think they can play in our team. So we're going to have a lot of players that we think are NHL players that aren't going to command a lot of cap space, which we think is going to give us a chance to be competitive, even if we have Pavel on our roster.
I'm curious, you know, when you drafted Pavel in the 80s, guys were secret, and you got guys later, and you hit on a lot of those. That wasn't the case. Pavel Datsyuk drafted relatively late. I'm just curious, like, who was it that cultivated that, and when did you at first realize that you had a guy that really could have theoretically gone first overall in a draft?
Hawk and Anderson is totally responsible for Pav, who took him in the seventh round. And it's funny because, not funny, but, you know, if you look at Pavel's first 3 years in the National Hockey League, he scored 10 goals, 11 goals, and 12 goals. And I think he was 22, 23, 24 years old. And then he went back during the work stoppage in 05, and he led the Russian league in scoring at 25. And then he came back and then from 25 to 26 years of age to about 33, 34, you know, he had a couple 97 point seasons and, you know, winning awards, you know, Lady Bings and best two way forward in the game. So, you know, that's, you know, when you're driving, we're dealing in a league with lots of young people, and it's the importance of patience to let them fulfill their potential. And Pavlidi fulfilled his potential at 26 years of age. So when did we know that we had a special player? I think that, you know, I went and overwatched him after we had drafted him play a whole bunch of times in the representing Russia in the Sweden games, and then you know, the Finland tournament. And Pav stayed out high. You didn't see a lot of offense, and there wasn't a lot of offense when he first came to the NHL for 3 years. The offense came when he was here. So, you know, we thought we had something. We thought we had a really good young two-way player. Did we think that we had one of the best players in the world, as he turned out to be, you know, when he got to be 28, 29, 30, 31? I don't think we knew that until he'd been over here for 2 or 3 years and it started to come out. I think that it's not like he was a number one overall pick and, you know, he'd been on the radar screen and you see them, they hit. He was a late bloomer, a late developer, and he was a guy that was more concerned about playing defense than he was about offense. His offense really came started to surface when he came to North America.
Kenny Holland's with us, the general manager of the Detroit Red Wings. Just want to switch gears a little bit to talk about your goaltending. Do you have an issue there? Do you expect both guys to be Red Wings next year? Peter Mrazek and Jimmy Howard?
Yeah, I got to get Peter signed. He's a restricted free agent. You know, certainly, you know, I thought that, you know, as you look at our goaltending, and obviously we have to... Peter Mrazek played about, you know, 50 games this year, and the wheels came off a little bit of in the middle of February, and we kept trying to give him an opportunity. Jimmy Howard really came in and I thought saved our season when our season was on the line. So you got to have two goaltenders. We don't have one guy that can play 70 games, and we just need someone to make $650,000 and play 10 or 12 games. So, you know, we need two goaltenders. You know, Peter Mrazek is our number one guy as we head into training camp, but he's 23 years of age. You know, if you look, the 1 year when Grand Rapids went on a long playoff run, I think he played 20 playoff games, but really, you know, in his junior and pro career, he plays 50, 55 games a year. So I think he can play more at some point in time. Is it this year? I guess what I'm saying is you need two goaltenders. I got to sit and negotiate a deal with with Peter Mrazek and his agents, and we'll sit down and as we go along here over the next week or 10 days, we'll see where we go with our goaltending. But I thought our goaltending was the strength of our team this year. The wheels came off of both of them at different times, but when the wheels came off of Jimmy Howard in January and February, Peter Mrazek took the ball and ran, and when the wheels came off of Peter in middle of February and March, Jimmy Howard took the ball and run. So we're going to need two really good goaltenders like all teams do.
I was just going to say, because if it's just for playing 10 games, $650,000, there's a few people lining up for that. But if you have to be good, if you have to actually stop the puck, then that changes everything.
You guys know what I mean.
I know. I'm just saying. Scotty Morrison would love it.
We don't have. There's 10 goalies in the league that I'm saying 10. I don't know if it's 8, but there's a small group
of
goaltenders that can play. They're workhorses. They can play 70 games a year, and they can continue to play at a certain level over the period of time because of their age, because of their ability, because of their experience, because of a lot of things. We're hoping Peter can develop into that, but Peter's 23. I think it's unfair to Peter. It's unfair to the organization, and it could possibly be detrimental if we put Peter in a situation where we're just going to throw him out and play 70 games, and no matter how you play, we're going to keep putting you out. I don't think that's player development. I don't. You got to put your players into a situation to succeed. So having a really good backup and a really good second goalie to go along with Peter Mrazek as an insurance for Peter, that give him nights off, is in the best interest of Peter Mrazek, and it's the best interest of the Detroit Red Wings. Jimmy Howard provides that. Now, obviously, he makes a lot of money.
Yeah.
We pay him that contract to be a number one goaltender, and he was an all-star a couple of years. In 2 years there, he had 920, 220, you know, a 920 saves percentage in back-to-back years, and a 220 and a 221 goals against average, and played 65 games each year. So, you know, he was that workhorse. So certainly he makes too much money to be, you know, in the whole grand scheme of things. But at the same time, If we got Datsyuk on the cap, having a really good 1-2 punch in goal is going to be a priority, I think, to all the teams, but certainly to our team.
You were one of the longer tenured general managers. I can't believe you just don't go and intimidate the other guys. Just lean on them a little bit and say you're taking this Datsyuk contract.
Yeah.
Get right in their grill.
Yeah.
That's not your style, though.
No.
You've been great to come on. I know it's been a long few days for you, and it's frustrating at times, but we really appreciate your time, Kenny.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime.
There's Kenny Holland, the general manager of the Detroit Red Wings. That between Jimmy Howard and Pavel Datsyuk, those are two issues for that salary cap. Now, we should be clear.
That's the Datsyuk be contract flat as well.
The Datsyuk contract isn't. It's cap money. It's not real money.
It helps
you get helps you get to the floor.
Yeah, when it's the most valued commodity, the player called cap space. You're right, and you know it's funny, they used to be able to massage contracts. Like Marian Hossa would take 1 year just to go there rather than somewhere else, right? You know what I mean? Like they would bring guys in, and that's part of what they don't have anymore. When you don't win the Stanley Cups, they could sculpt deals that guys would leave money on the table to become a member of the Detroit Red Wings. So that adds to it.
Breaking news here: the Edmonton Oilers have announced their home opener for next year. It will take place on October 12th at Rogers Place, breaking in the new building against the Calgary Flames.
That's the schedule's being released today.
Yeah, so there you go. The Oilers announced that the Rogers Place home opener will take place on October 12th. That's the Wednesday, opening week of the season, against the Calgary Flames.
Calgary, very good.
And we have their coach,
Glenn Gulletson.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, one thing I always love, one of the great moments that really worked, that all-star draft, when Zdeno Chara picked his Boston Bruin players second through fifth and said, I asked my teammates if I could take Pavel Datsyuk first. And keep in mind, they were in opposite conferences then. He would only see him firsthand, play against him twice a year. I thought that was the ultimate tribute, a player's compliment about, and he just said something, I admired the way he played. And he was that first pick for Team Chara or whatever it was in that All-Star game.
Boy, now you're getting emotional.
A little bit, yeah, yeah. Kenny, it's funny.
Kenny and I were just fired up. You're on the
Ken's
on the
fired up. That's right. Emotional, wasn't it? He's fired
did
up.
Did you not
he
sense
be.
That a little bit?
Like he was fired up. I think his emotions are perfectly in check, but I think that's a better phrase for it.
What's Morrison?
No, you're getting emotional now because disagreed about him being fired up.
When we continue, Glenn Gulletson pop on the program, and a significant anniversary on the NHL calendar today. And the context to what it means over what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. We'll explain that in Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet, and the NHL Network.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Continuing on Hockey Central at noon, so the anniversary that I mentioned.
Of what?
This is what happened. In 2008, on this day, do you know what this day is?
June
20th. I think.
June 20th, 2008, the Tampa Bay Lightning selected Steven Stamkos first overall. Steven Stamkos, one of the most highly sought after unrestricted free agents, and that negotiating window starts on Saturday. So it doesn't look like somebody's going to trade for his...
Not negotiation, discussion.
Discussion.
Well, the NHL is emphatic that there is a difference.
Okay, discussion.
Discussing numbers.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that would be boring. Cut
you have
to the
tape
chase.
Your conversations. And...
Well, I'm glad, you know, they've gotten rid of the going through a charade like you miraculously had a deal for 1201 or 301 or whenever they started.
Well, it used to be years ago, midnight, that it started, and 1201, all of a sudden somebody had negotiated a 7-year deal for whatever, millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Just craziness.
Andrew Ladd, unrestricted free agent. David Backes will hit unrestricted free agency. Milan Lucic of the Los Angeles Kings. Right now, he's headed towards unrestricted free agency. There's a lot of clutter in this list, but there's 4 or 5 names that can jump out, and Steven Stamkos is number one. It's been a long time to get here for Steven Stamkos, Newport. Are you guys any closer to having an opinion on where he might end up?
Well, it's interesting. I'd heard the Red Wings. I'd heard Arizona as being two top spots. I'd heard Toronto, Montreal in the mix. I know Buffalo, Philadelphia will go after him.
Before people,
so that's where you hear a lot of different
shrug
things.
Off Arizona. They are definitely in a win now. Be competitive now and trend upward. This is not a rebuild. This is add assets.
And and that's a factor they would be looking at. I'm saying the Stamkos camp. So, I mean, those are the ones I've heard. And again, it just seems so often now, whatever you hear is not where they go. It just seemed to go somewhere else. But I just think he's going somewhere else. I really do.
I think there'll be a lot of teams kicking the tires, finding out what that magic number needs to be. But yeah, I mean, similar to Gord's list, those are the teams you hear bandied about as being the most interested and being in a position where they can, you know, comfortably as you can, make that kind of a commitment and that kind of dollar deal.
Now, how many years ago was it that David Clarkson was about the second or third top on UFA, correct? And got the big deal. And look at the names you're throwing out there. You know, Stamkos, Ladd, Lucic, guys like that. And Kyle Okposo. I mean, Garth Snow basically just said thanks, but no thanks. You know, didn't. And you've got now David Backes, that Doug Armstrong's just saying we're not going to sign any UFAs before July 1st. That
Stamkos is 26. The likes of Ladd is 30, and David Backes is captain of the St. Louis Blues, and David Backes is right in that same area. Of, I mean, there's such a difference between a guy in his mid 20s. And a guy in his 30s now.
Well, Steven Stamkos is the first guy that we thought there would be a ton of them in 2005. I thought when that first CBA came out, really the only, you know, guy that's been that a little bit's Brad Richards. You always thought there was going to be a big guy, maybe a Taves, an Ovechkin, a Crosby. You know, you dreamt about anybody coming to your organization, moving around, because they'd always talked about that before, and they pretty well all stay put. And now here's Steven Stamkos. You're right, a guy in, relatively speaking, in his prime. Willing to make the move.
Where do you think Stamkos ends up, Scotty?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's a great question. I guess you kind of have to figure out what his shopping list is. What are the most important factors in him making his decision? Is it strictly dollars? I got to think that there's two or three teams that can kind of come in at the same dollar value. Is it going to a team that is on the verge of winning now or poised to win now and that you're the missing piece? Or are you willing to go to a situation that you can see a light at the end of the tunnel? Perhaps a Toronto, for instance, that, you know, a younger team that may be good in a couple of years, especially with your presence. So
how hard,
not knowing
Toronto
the answers
pushes
to those questions, I think they get in there and I think they're very serious. I really do. I don't think signing a Steven Stamkos derails your, you know, if he's willing to buy into your program and knowing how fast or not so fast your development and turnaround is going to be, then I don't think he derails the program at all. It doesn't cost you players to get a guy
like
of
Kessel
that caliber.
And Sagan did.
Exactly. All it costs you are dollars, and you have plenty of those. So, yeah. And given, again, his age, it doesn't, to me, stray again, away from the philosophy of what you're trying to do in terms of building your team.
Phil Kessel cost them two firsts and a second. You know, just a high draft player still, you know, getting his prime or on the verge of being on his prime. So,
and then he cost them money when they moved him.
Well, exactly. But I mean, I think this is a one-off. You get the best, whoever it is, the best UFA since 2004. So, I mean, how can you not?
And if you're able to bring him in, it takes so much heat off Austin Matthews.
Well, and also
and his development.
And any team in general. You can overthink this thing and think, wait a sec, wow, we're getting a guy, a chance for this guy to land in our lap, number one overall pick, and, you know, this kind of player, and whatever in Tampa Bay, they've developed a lot of depth. I think one of the things is he'd like to get back to being the guy, and a lot of teams can offer him that. And, I would.
If you want to be the guy, do you want to come in to Toronto with the same time as Austin Matthews?
Sure.
Because you might be the guy for 1 year, 2 years, but when you're projecting.
Well, I don't mean the ego. I think just more on the ice and that. Like he's been quite, well, I just think the kind of player he is, he's fully developed. Austin Matthews could take some time, a little bit of time, but I just, I think you look at it, Austin Matthews, that's another step in the right direction. And that's on definitely on Steven Stamkos' shopping list. You know, a team going in the right direction, starting to win, put it together, rather than, say, the Toronto Maple Leaf team of a year ago.
The Tampa Bay Lightning will also have a strong say at this. I don't know where those negotiations have been recently, but they're a team that has so many issues coming up. But to lose a Steven Stamkos at 26 for nothing.
That hurts.
Yeah.
Big time. But they've got some really tough decisions to make financially when you think of contracts that are coming up on the horizon, from the goaltender to the defenseman to a few of those good young forwards.
Like Calgary had to do.
Yeah.
The tough decision financially on whether or not you sign Glenn Gullitson. Here's the coach of the Calgary Flames. You ride in there in a big ticket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. No, I'm just hoping. Yeah, Stamkos is hopefully he gets close to what I got. That'd be nice for him.
You'd feel good for him.
He'll be
you?
He'll be firing his agent. I'll tell you that.
You've had a couple of days to reflect. The new coach of the Calgary Flames joining us in Hockey Central at noon with Millard and Shannon, or not Shannon, Morrison and Stellick. What do you think?
Yeah, very excited. I mean, whirlwind right now, right? I'm still in Vancouver here. I'm actually packing up my office here, so it's a whirlwind tour I'm on right now. But yeah, it gets the juices flowing for sure, and it's just such an honor for me to go into Calgary. I started there, you guys, right, as the affiliate back in when I was in Las Vegas, 14 years ago. So it's a real honor.
We had Randy Carlyle on last week, and this will be his third NHL go round. He just talked about he learned, even at his age, about dealing with young players and other things that way. What did you take from the head coaching experience? What might be a little bit different about Glenn Gullitson the second time around?
Yeah, I would say the same as Randy. Like I learned a ton, and guys, when I first came up, it was a quick jump for me. And I the biggest thing that I gained from is just dealing with the players in the league and the schedule and being in the league. There's nothing like experience. It's almost like if you're going to university and then they put you on your first job site building a building. Well, until you're on the job site, that stuff at school doesn't mean much, right? So it was a big learning curve for me. But getting to know the league and the players and just the style of play, and when I say the schedule, just the grind of this 82-game schedule, that was a real big learning for me. And yeah, definitely, I look back 5 years now that I've been in the National Hockey League. I look back and I think, these 5 years have really helped me and will make me better as a coach the second time.
So how do you want this Calgary team to play? What sort of style do you envision or want?
Well, I certainly want, we're going to pick up the pace of play here as far as we want to be a connected, fast group. We've got some size in the wings with some guys too. Our heavy guys are going to have to be heavy, but we're going to have to use our speed. I look at the back end guys and boy, there's not too many teams in the league that have four defensemen that all have had 40 plus seasons, right? And then some into the 50s. So we're going to use those Mustangs at the back. We're going to play a fast game here with some of those young legs we have up front. And in the West, you need to be a little bit of a blend. So our heavy guys are going to have to be heavy, and our fast guys are going to have to be fast and compete hard. But we certainly want to be a connected, pacey club.
When you watch a Pittsburgh and the success they had and the way they played, does that influence you in any way, or do you learn from it?
Well, there's no question, but I sat here for a whole year with about 10 feet from Mike Sullivan, right? And in my first year in Vancouver, and with John and Mike and myself, and we had hours of conversation. And, certainly watching Pittsburgh, it certainly does influence you. But you watch the other teams, you watch Tampa, and then, you look at our Western Division here. L.A. won it a certain way, right? But you look at Chicago, they were a bit of a blend. They could play both styles of the game. They could play a real pace style. They could play a heavy style. So I think the importance is to, at the end of the day, when the roster set in September, you look at your group and you see what style of play is going to benefit the players that we have. But when the way it stands now, it's certainly we're going to have to play a blend of speed, and our heavy guys will have to be heavy for sure. But, you know, that you know, Pittsburgh influences everyone. But, you know, San Jose was a big, strong team, and it takes that to get through the West.
Chatting with Ken Hitchcock a couple of times this year, he keeps bringing up the fact that it's the new age, and you got to be texting with players, and you got to be part of social media and be on online and on their same level. Glenn Gullitson with us, the Calgary Flames' new head coach. So, are you a texter? Are you a Snapchatter? You do all that stuff?
Oh God, I honestly, if Hitch does that, good to him, because I'm not on anything, Facebook or whatever it is. I have Snapchat. I don't know how to use any of those things. But, you know, for me, I guess I'll text the guys, but, you know, I still like to pick up the phone and call somebody or talk to them face to face. I think that's the best way to connect. You know, every day you can't, you know, sometimes that text is just easier because that's the way the young guys communicate for sure. And it's the new generation, but, there's still some value to just having chats and little connections with guys daily. And that's something that I really like to do is, you know, I keep a running total here of, you know, I want to know, I enjoy coaching players. I've coached for 16 years and geez, I like the guys and I want to know about them and what their dads do and what you'll find and their moms do and what they like. And what you'll find is they're not that different from the way we were. They communicate a little different. They need to know why a little bit more. They want to know how it benefits them a little bit more. But at the end of the day, they're a lot like the way the young, you know, the past generations were in a lot of things. So, but communication is still the key, and I'll do it, you know, through text. I don't do Snapchat or anything, but I still like the face-to-face and the touches and the individual, you know, touching each guy every day in practice, meeting, going around and saying, hey, tapping them on the shin pad and saying, hey, how was your dad's visit, whatever. I like to do that stuff. It actually means a lot to me.
We've got about a minute here.
Okay, just quick question, Glenn. Last year when you were putting a scouting report together for the opposing Calgary Flames, what would you say?
Yeah, every guy in the league said the same thing. Watch their D. Their D are always in the play. Their D generate a lot of their offense. So we got to do – and the other thing was, okay, there's this Monahan and Goudreau guy that are very, very dangerous, and we've got to pay attention to him, you know. So, and we played them in the playoffs too, and that's exactly what we said. You know, they had a certain style of play, but their D were the drivers of most of their offense, and then they had you know, some dynamic players up front.
Before you worked with Willie Desjardins in Vancouver, you were an assistant with John Tortorella. He's a big fan of yours. I'm just curious, did John reach out to you and tell you how to get to the home dressing room in that Calgary arena? Because I think John knows.
He's got a shortcut.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I was in that hallway, and that came up in that Calgary thing. And, you know, I was in that hallway down there while we were discussing something. You know, it's funny how that works, but it came up in Calgary a few times, and we've had a few chuckles about it.
Well, at least you can laugh about it. And congratulations. I hope Brad Troy Living played that Week King card to get the discount, too.
Yeah, I hope he did, too.
congrats,
he did.
Glenn.
He did.
Good, yeah. Good. You're alumni. Thanks for doing this, and good luck.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
We'll see you in Buffalo. There's Glenn Gullitson, the new coach of the Calgary Flames. It's odd, because that was such an emotional time for, I mean, it derailed John Tortorella. Got him, sent him right out of town.
That was it. That was it. That was the Canucks season. That was his career, his Canucks coaching
Canucks career,
kind of. Yeah. It was funny. Kevin Bieksa peeking out the back, right?
Now, where would you be in that whole lineup of people trying to?
I'd still be trying to come down from the press box, whatever. Oh, so, yeah, I would. Yeah, I would be a non-factor.
And he wouldn't be taking the elevator. Yeah. He'd be going by the stairs.
Everybody's walking back the other way, and you're like, what did I miss? What happened? Thanks to Kenny Holland. Different side of Kenny Holland today.
Yeah.
I'd say it was us, but he's been on before. It might have been just me. And Glenn Gullitson. We will chat tomorrow, get more into draft talk as we continue to work our way towards the first round on Friday in Buffalo.